Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Scott Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Yo, what's poppin', Rush Nation? It's been a while since I've done that, but I'm back. We're back. We had a week off last week. Our schedules were crazy busy and we just couldn't find the time to get together. But again, this week we are a day late. It is Friday, not Thursday, but it's the off season. We're flexible. We're like water, which we've had way too much of because it just doesn't. I'm pretty sure we are in the biblical part of when Noah in his boat was doing 40 days and nights, except I saw a post the other day to say we haven't had more than 3 days in a row without rain. So
you should live in Midlands, something, mate. Because in the Midlands, like, it's rained June. Every day.
Yeah. I mean, it's rained every day here, but yeah, since June, there hasn't been 3 days of more than 3 days, which I can't believe. But hey, it absolutely feels like we've had more rain than there is water on planet Earth. So that throwback to
drought in June.
Oh, there will 100% be hosepipe bans in April.
Yeah.
Like, I have no idea how we've got so far off the rails 1 minute 25 seconds into the podcast, but it genuinely, I've never been this wet in my entire life. And for those of you that don't know, I work outside, so I'm not just moaning about watching the rain through a window. I do spend 85% of my time at the moment being wet. So shout out to anybody else who works out outside, because that is crazy at the moment, but also works outside, because more props to you, right, Murph?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't envy you. We've been working out. There's days I do. There's days I sit there and think it'd be really nice to have a job that meant working outside, but not at the moment. Not with all this weather and all this rain. It's freaking horrific. Like, I sent you pictures of like my lawn when I cut it. Oh God, we should just call this the two old man dad podcast, because it's just literally us moaning about the weather and having a garden and stuff. So yeah. How wet my garden was. But yeah, it is what it is. Like, it's in the Midlands, it's the wettest place in the world. I get flood alerts every day pops up my Alexa, the first thing I see in the morning, flood alert. I'm like, you know, I was bored off of it now. I'm like, bored of it. I get it. Every day is a flood alert. Like, all the floodplains, because I've got floodplains all around me. They're all like at highs, ridiculous. But we got them, so my house doesn't get ruined. So, you know,
Every cloud has a wet lining. yeah, we're back today finishing off our series of reviewing last week. We're going to be doing some kickers and DSTs because those and tight ends. But the positions are important in fantasy football. Some people don't want them. Some people love to have them. We've flipped and flopped throughout our time doing this, Murph, as to whether we think these positions are important for fantasy or not.
I think every position is important. I just think you've got to get the scoring right. I remember the early days of this podcast. 6-7 years ago or whatever it was, and we talked about we had Marcus Grant on, and we talked about how kicker scoring was just broken. Doesn't work. It's pointless. Doesn't make any sense. It offers nothing. And things like the Scott Fish Bowl have invented scoring to where flexing kickers is a viable strategy. And it's like everything. Every position needs to have a scoring review from time to time. We've moved away from standard scoring as a format for the most part because it was all running backs, less wide receivers. To make wide receivers more fun, we started adding an element of points per reception, right? And then people say, well, you can't mess with that because you can't mess with kickers because kickers are kickers. They're not that important in football. The amount of times that kickers win games, win Super Bowls, win matches that are important, it's an important position. DST is an important position. Like, it shouldn't be so generic to where it doesn't matter. Like, it's got to have a relevance, and this is why IDP is great, and I'm a massive IDP advocate. Tight ends, you know, I've always talked about tight ends as a strategy in a really negative way, but I actually genuinely love tight ends. It's why my favorite format is the Superflex Tight End Premium with Custard DST and kicker scoring, because every position's relevant. And then you get to a point where there's multiple ways to win a league. And it is about who gets the better understanding of the strategy and who gets the better understanding of the draft and the point scoring, and then utilizing that, understanding when those tier cliffs happen. So you add a tight end premium, you add a super flex to make quarterbacks relevant, and then you adjust the kicker and the DST scoring, and you've got all six positions highly relevant. You play on I wish that we get to a point that Sleeper would allow you to flex kickers and flex other positions. We're not there yet. Scott Fish will, I'm sure, make it work one day. And then you can have even more interesting leagues. But I get it. I get a lot of people say just bang kickers. I get it. On the scoring that is in place for kickers, it's crap, right? It is crap. There's no point in denying it. But if you ever play in any of our leagues, I don't play with the standard scoring. I make the missing of kicks highly punishable. So extra points are like if you miss an extra point, it's like -3 points.
Yeah.
So that you have to draft like an accurate, there is a point to drafting an accurate kicker.
I think though what we see as I wanted to say the industry, but in the game of fantasy football itself, you know, as you mentioned, we've deviated away from standard because the fantasy football community realized that PPR was necessary to almost nerf the running back, like you said. But the more we, as a fantasy football community, play the game, most leagues now have a custom scoring point to them across, you know, there are very few. No. I mean that we play in.
Okay.
Because of what you just said about adjusting the scoring. I don't think there's I'm trying to think of any of, maybe one or two of my leagues that I play in, redraft leagues, are just standard now. And they're just set up because a bunch of mates set up a league and just have more banter about the fantasy. I think that most of my leagues now have some form of custom scoring because the industry is getting more used to creating scoring that is beneficial for their league.
And then I will sit here and tell you that the leagues that fill out the quickest if the listener leagues every year is the PPR and the Standard League. They're the two that fill up the quickest every year.
But then is the PPR and standard scoring in the listener leagues standard?
Yeah.
It's just as it comes out the can. Nothing is tweaked.
I think maybe I might tweak the kicker story ever so slightly, but not to the extremes as I would in other leagues. But yeah, pretty much it's pretty standard out of the box. Two most popular leagues, they fill up the quickest every year without fail.
But you can.
I get your point 100%. The leagues that we play in, the leagues that people who listen to this podcast play in for a good portion of it, I 100% agree with you. There is a desire and a need to create more interesting leagues. My job every year is to create more interesting leagues.
But you think it's more interesting? Do you think calling it more interesting is the right thing to do? Or are we trying to tweak it towards the fair, more perfect fairing, fair scoring?
I think it depends on what your appetite is for the game. So I would say this. I would say that I tweak scoring towards more strategic leagues to make it harder and therefore reduce the luck element to a degree. Some people just highly don't like that. Some people would rather just play what they know, stick to what they know, and do that and have that element of luck. Whereas other players like the skill element of changing the scoring to create a need to do research, a need to keep on top of things, a need to take it up a level. And listen, there's an element of luck in every single league. I'm not sitting here saying that a customized league is luck free. It's not. It's still injury. There's a lot of different elements to it. But I truly believe that, and well, I caveat that a 12 team or league with customized settings requires more strategy, therefore I think reduces luck to a degree and requires more interpretation of strategy. A Scott Fishbowl with 3,500 people in it is completely luck if you win that. Not like, I would say completely, but it's highly luck-based because there's so many outcomes outside of your control. Because you cannot control who's drafted in other leagues, at what positions they're drafted. There's no, like, once you go beyond one draft, the luck factor goes back the other way. And that's why those mass tournaments, if you win it, it's why the same person isn't going to win it twice. It's just, it's like the World Series of Poker. The same person is not going to win the main event of the World Series of Poker twice in a row. Just, it won't happen because the element of luck massively goes the other way. Whereas if it was two sets of final tables with nine people, not just because there's more people in the tournament and therefore the varying of outcomes, but also you've got different drafts, different environments, different control settings that are just beyond impossible for for it to be a predictable variable. Excuse me. So with, I think it's a case of different leagues have different strategies. I say interesting. I don't know if that's necessarily the right choice of word. It's probably just what to me. I like leagues that require different paths to victory with different strategy angles to it. I think a standard league, I could pretty much auto draft that with a queue and be competitive and not turn up for the draft.
But that, I think that is because the above average thirst for fantasy football you and other analysts have, because you have evolved your skill set above the average fantasy football player.
I agree with that. I also believe that there's less predictable so there's less variable in a setup like that. So you know that in a standard league, for example, you have to go running back heavy. If you don't have running backs, you can't, you know, it's very difficult to win that league. So you can predict when players are going to go off a board in a draft with relative success. Tends to follow ADP very, very, very close to ADP. That's why an auto draft, you can auto draft a league like that and you'll probably be okay. And that's where I have a problem with it, because what it doesn't do is it doesn't penalize mistakes, and it doesn't reward bravery as much. I think that's kind of my, I don't want to say disliking. I still play them. I'm still highly enjoy those leagues, but I'm just saying that for me, the reason that I like other leagues with custom scoring and weird formats that require my brain to engage to understand the different paths to victory, there is a case where you can 100% go on a strategy and be 100% wrong and you're done. And you can draft a team that absolutely, and we talked about this when we talked about contrarian and not seeking, you know, not seeking consensus, not deviating away from what people think to a degree. And we talked about my Scottish Bowl team, which was ranked in the bottom 100 of 3,500 people. And I finished 104 overall. You know, I went from the bottom 100 to the top 100. And I liked my draft. I liked my draft a lot better than anybody else liked my draft because I had a strategy going in. I evaluated the scoring and I had a draft plan that I believe I executed extremely well that did involve some reaches that people hated. People hated me taking Deebo Samuel in the third round. People hated me taking Etienne where I took him. People hated me taking players that were a round or two above a reach. But it was because that's where I valued that player. I wasn't sure they were going to get back, and I had a value on them that was over consensus. And I'm fine with that because it worked out. And I would have been fine with it if it didn't work out because that was my plan. I would have learned from it for future years. I've made many draft strategies that have been incorrect. And, you know, I've had to pay a heavy price for them. And I think it's just a case of, for me, I like the idea of being able to play in a contrarian way and be either rewarded or severely punished for it. Whereas I think in a PPR, in a standard league, I find it very difficult to go contrarian. Because if you go heavily contrarian, the risk to reward ratio is not there. I think I find it because you're the only one that's going to go completely out there. Normally in a contrarian style play, you'll take a couple of people with you. In a PPR, in a standard league, you're probably going to be the only one out. If you zero RB'd a standard league, for example, you are probably going to be the only person out there that's going to do it. And so your path to victory is going to be very, very difficult because effectively you need to hit every single one of your late round RBs and you need to hope that your wide receivers go and perform above the consensus, which is very, very difficult to do. That's a really narrow scope to your plan being highly successful. Whereas in a league with, say, a super flex tight end premium, you can fade quarterbacks, play only one QB and use your super flex with the stud wide receivers, stud tight ends that you might have picked up that will counterbalance those points. There's different paths to victory. If you played a super flex with that strategy this year, you'd have been able to stream great quarterbacks towards the end. You'd have picked someone like Joe Flacco and he would have won you a league. So your path to victory is you've got a wider range of outcomes because you're not reliant on one or two positions being successful. You've got different routes to make that work. And I think that's where we're getting to with this is the reason there is a demand for deviation is because it brings players with a above average skill set into play to give them an advantage for sure, because it does reduce the luck element, but then it also rewards knowledge and degenerate. So it rewards people who are active. It rewards people who can think outside the box and be contrarian, whereas those that tend to follow draft guides, draft samples, and just stick to it like a blueprint might struggle. Not always, but will struggle more. And I think that's where it depends what your appetite is. Some people like to play it to play it and to play the game and is not as invested in the outcome. And that's where those standard leagues are still the most popular and will always be the most popular because, you know, John's home league has been running for 23 years, has been a standard league, and they're not going to change it now.
Yeah.
Because that's what everyone plays. But then also, I don't think you should. I think if that's the tradition and the value and the camaraderie, and I almost think that the luck element that is brought into those leagues is what makes the folklore of those leagues.
Yeah.
And I think, like, in those traditional home leagues that have been going for so many years, I think it would be a crying shame to get rid of those kind of formats. You know, we had Joel on, who's the commissioner of a league I'm in, a while back. And he is adamant he will never bring PPR in. He's like, it's not real. Like, he's like, for me, you don't get points for catching the ball in football. And I went, yeah, but you don't start two running backs. He won't do Superflex. He hates Superflex. He's like, why would you start two QBs? You don't start two QBs in regular football. He's like a diehard purist. He will not change it. And I'm great with it. Like, in that league, it's fine. It is a huge luck variance that can swing. But
it's what we're... The thing for us has always been fantasy football is fun, right? First and foremost, 100%. you do it for it to be fun. So if, like, the league you were just talking about, they are purists, and I do appreciate a purist league, and it's fun, that works for them. And then by creating different leagues that are interesting, in air quotes, for the degenerate like yourself, you're just casting your net to play with other degenerates, really, essentially. 100%. And then that increases the fun level for you at that point.
Yeah, and for the others that play it. You know,
exactly.
The feedback that I get from the listener leagues, and we do some crazy formats, is people love them. People love them because they're weird, that they are insane. And, you know, I have people question what goes on in my brain to come up with concepts like that, but they are fun and people do enjoy them. I enjoy them. Other people. And do you know what I like is I love it. I know when a format is good, when those at the bottom who are losing are still having fun. That's when I know I've hit across a good format. When I know that people that are losing are still having fun, that there's still something for them to take away and enjoy every week, even if it is the absolute carnage of the league. Like, that's when you know. And the other way you can tell it's a good league, if you've got a really good league, that there isn't a runaway leader. You know, if you've created a really good format, there's going to be a lot of people in the mix getting into the playoff season in the final week. If you've got a scale where you could have as many as, like, 4 to 6 teams that are, like, on the bubble / in or out fighting for 2 or 3 spots, then you've done a great job as a league and as a commissioner. Like, there's nothing worse than having, like, a 14-0 team like in a league. It is demoralizing, not just for the rest of the league, but also for the 14-0. Like, they'll love it. Go, yeah, it's my 14-0 team. But and you'll love it, like, but the pressure of going undefeated from there is so enormous.
Yep.
Because you could lose one game after going 14-0 and not win the championship.
I've been there.
And that's what I mean. You've been, like, we've all been. It's ridiculous. And it's like, that's why I quite like the idea. Like, for me, I like leagues that have league medians. I like the fact that you can be rewarded. It takes the element of the luck from the schedule out. You know, everyone has got a horror story where they've been top scorer in a league and not made a playoffs because they've had a crap schedule. So I like playing the league median every week because it eliminates that rough schedule element of it. A good team will be rewarded. If they're a high scoring team, they should still make the playoffs even with a bad schedule. So, you know, there's lots of different things that you can do to make leagues. I think ultimately it's down to dealer's choice. It's what you like and what you are preferencing and what you enjoy. If you're listening to this and you're thinking, I really want to play in a stupid, crazy, moronic league, then I'm your guy. Get in contact. Because I've got some insane... I genuinely don't know how I come up with them. I just sit there and think, this would be a really cool thing to do. And then just do it. And lucky enough, I've got degenerates who will just try it. It's, yeah, all right, fine. That sounds nuts. let's do it. And I'm luckily boiled that I've got enough people that will just let me play on my whims. I still think the craziest format I've got is the Rules Mania format. That is single-handedly, and I genuinely love and hate those leagues in equal measure. What's interesting with the league, so if you don't know what a Rules Mania league is, there's two drafts. The first draft is every person in the league gets to create a custom rule. So the custom rule can either be scoring related, position related, draft related, or something else within reason. I, as a commish, get an automatic veto on anything. And the reason for that is some ideas are so either stupid or unenforceable or just too much work. So that I've had some rules, it's like, oh, for every 50 snaps someone plays, they get a point. And I'm like, I can't regulate that. No, I'm not doing it. Like, you can fight, you can F off with our knees. You F off with that one. Like, I'm not doing it. I'm not going through every single player in the league snap counts in real time and adding them up and then adding bonus points and then customizing it and then waiting for the league to tell me they're wrong and then readjust them. Like, no, not doing it.
You can do your own stat corrections.
Yeah, no, I'm not doing it. Like, it was bad. So some I've had to do over time. Someone, like, we've had the captain rule that you nominate a captain and they get double points like in FPL. But what's interesting is the amount of people that create rules to create negative points. And I'm like, I genuinely don't understand, like, why. I don't understand. Like, I was in a Rules Mania league and I had to draw a line and say, guys, you've basically eliminated fantasy football. Like, yep. The top score in the league is going to be 24 points. Like, no one's scoring points. Like, it's going to be somewhere between negative 50 and 24 points. Like, what are we shooting for? 0-0 draws. Like, why? That's not fun.
We're
trying to avoid disaster classes. But if it was one rule, you go, okay, fine. But it was like four or five. And I was like, guys, this is just defeating the entire purpose of the game. Like, I'm all for giving out, like, and then, like, the ones that go city points, like a running back touchdown should be 40 points. And you're just like, yeah, but is that really any fun? Like, you just devalue the other position so much that it's just pointless. Like, yeah. You're just like, why?
There are two types of people in this world, and it is vaguely, massively apparent when you play a board game where you can either move somebody forward, you can either move yourself forward amount of spaces, or you can move the other team back. And I guarantee you, 85 to 90% of people will always move the other team back than move themselves closer to the goal.
Which I don't understand. I only get that. In some, there is some elements where that is a right strategic play, but it's not as many as 85% of the time.
They are always, that position, that play is always, if you are miles behind the opponent and it's faster for them to come back towards you than it is for you to get to them. Otherwise, you always move yourself forward.
Yeah.
I'm firmly in the 15 to 10% of move forwarders in this world. Yeah, but it's the same as what you just said with fantasy football. Just make everything worse as opposed to make yourself better.
Yeah, and I think that's it. So, like, for me, I like rules that add strategy to it, that add an element. And then, like, there's some rules that are just really difficult to enforce. And I'm just like, guys, I'm not policing that on my own. Just FYI, like, if it goes through the net and no one picks it up, like, if you play someone and get it in that week and they violate that rule and you haven't spotted it as the person playing them, too bad, so sad. I am not monitoring every aspect of it because it's impossible. It'd be things like you can only have two players from one team play, or someone who a classic one they always do is, you can only have, like, a certain amount of players from, or you have to have one person starting from each conference And you can't have more than two from any conference. Not conference, division.
How does that work, though, if you don't have that in your team? Do you have to drop someone to the waivers to pick someone up to fulfill that need?
And then it's a clever rule in the sense of, from a strategy perspective, but from a policing perspective, that's really difficult because you have to look at every single roster and every single starting lineup spot and make sure it's compliant. And I just don't have the time. Like, it's a great idea. And then I just say to that person, do you want to police it? And they're like, no. Well, then we're not doing it because I'm not doing it. Like, I get it. From a strategy standpoint, that seems kind of cool. But it's also very limiting in who you can pick.
You've got a band of merry men there that are few and far between. I think that league of rules mania is very, very specific.
Yeah, and I think, it is. And there's some years it's really good. Some years I've enjoyed it less. But it is a fun concept, and it is different because you can't plan for it either. You're literally like, you are where you are. And we've now started a dynasty format of that, where the rules can't change for 2 years. Right. So my favorite rules mania rule, by the way, is that every round of the draft is randomized.
That is wild. See, you just belong in a box of all these other weirdos, Murph. Like, that's not fantasy football.
It's great because you've got to think about, like, the person you take in your pick in that round. You better be sure, because you might not be picking till, like, 14th in the next round. And that could be, like, 31 spots. But also, you could get really screwed and be picking, like, in the bottom three, like, four rounds in a row. And it just absolutely destroys your team. Or you could be picking in the top four. It's great. It is carnage. But I love it because it means that you have to be really sure on who you draft. Because if you get that wrong.
But the majority of us, we are not sure. The majority of us are not sure in a standard draft. That's too much. I'm sorry, sir. You have gone too far.
Mind you, we've spent 30 minutes talking about leagues and we haven't talked about absolutely anything else.
That's because, well, it's off season. It doesn't really matter, does it? But if you are an original OG listener and you remember one of my favourite episodes of all time, Murph and I had the great tight end debate of, I want to say, 2017, 2018, something along. It was a long, long. It was a long time ago. Where I was a huge advocate of taking Travis Kelce in the first round, and Murph and I got into it big style. And I definitely recommend go back and see if you can find it, because it was a tremendous episode. And apart from Travis Kelce in the first round, Murph, are we at a crossroads now where the change of this strategy is potentially coming? There's obviously more talent now of what we've seen from this year and the draft class that came out, and there is lots more tight ends that are viable now. Is there a different strategy going to be in play next year, do you think?
It's a good question. So first of all, I don't think Travis Kelce in the first round is a viable option.
He wasn't last year.
And I don't think it is going forward. I think we're at the very end of the Travis Kelce arc career. I will be surprised if Travis Kelce is even the first player, the first tight end drafted off the boards come summer.
No.
I actually think he'll be tight end too.
Do you know you missed a tremendous Taylor Swift pun there where you could have said the end of the Travis Kelce era? That would have sent the Swifties.
I could have done, but you know what?
So, enough of Travis Kelce Swift. Who do you think is going to be tight end one then?
Sam Laporte.
Wowzers.
I think Sam Laporte will come off the board as tight end one. I think he will end up being the settled consensus. People like the new hotness. He was the tight end one overall last year. That Detroit offense, you want to get pieces of it. I don't know where he's going to go. My gut tells me he will be in the top 30, probably hovering somewhere between 24 and 30 is where I think Sam Laporte goes in drafts. I think the bottom line, you've got to look at it with the Chiefs, is that offense is not as good as it has been. People love Mahomes, but it doesn't put up the points. It used to. I still don't see the we're at Tyreek Hill. I don't see the threats there. We've seen that they're managing Kelce's workload. They got a lot of guys underneath. He'd be fine, but his price, I mean, he was going like 5 overall, 6 overall last year.
Yeah, it was steep.
And you got burned. You got burned big time. You finished as the tight end 3, which when you're picking a player at 5 overall when he finishes as the tight end 3, that's like, it's a huge bust. It's a huge, like, it's a monumental bust. Because you're taking a player you shouldn't be taking that high anyway, and he hasn't delivered. And you pay a really big price for that. Like, to give you, let's paint some context in this. Like, Travis Kelce last year in PPR scored 219.4 points. So he's got 219.4 points. If I was to tell you, if as a wide receiver in PPR, he would have been the wide receiver 24.
Yeah,
he'd have slotted in ahead of Jacoby Myers and behind Jordan Addison.
You go back a couple of years and Travis Kelce was top 5 wide receiver.
Right, and that's my point. So he's a wide receiver 24, and then you add all the running backs who scored more points than him. That's another 14 players. So he got outscored by 39 players without quarterbacks. There you go. Pitsia said the great tight end debate was 3rd of January 2019. I thought that was earlier than that, but there you go. Thanks, Pitsy. Well,
thanks.
Yeah, but you took a guy 5th overall and he's, you know, nearly the 40th best scorer in the position. You know, doesn't work.
And not only that, when we were talking about not drafting Kelce this year, it was because the risk of taking a tight end at that position, let alone the rest of the positions you were giving up. So not only did you draft a tight end and limit the positions you could get, your tight end didn't perform. So it was almost a double burn.
Yeah, you were just in real trouble at that stage. And then there's no coming back from it. So, like, let's look at it this way. The players that were drafted high and did okay, there was one player that if you took reasonably high in a draft, they did okay. And that was TJ Hockenson. And TJ Hockenson was going at about 35, 40 overall, depending on your league. And we're sort of talking about their 4th round. He got injured. He was on pace to be the tight end 1 overall. He would have been on points per game. He was about tight end 1 overall. So when he played, he had an impact. I'd say it's okay. I'm not going to sit here and say he smashed it, but I will say that he was okay. Like, you took him there. You got about your value for him. And I think for me, I can't justify taking a tight end in the first 3 rounds of a draft. They don't offer enough of a difference at the position. They don't create and again, we're going into these numbers here. Sam Laporta finished as a tight end.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
On last year, he scored 239.3 PPR points. David Njoku, who was the tight end 6, scored 201. So it's a difference of 38 points. That's about 2 points per game. Trey McBride drops. He's tight. So it's another 20 points back to the Titans 7, Trey McBride. But he was basically free. So, I mean, Sam Laporte was drafted low. Evan Ingram returned about what you kind of expected. TJ Hockenson would have been fine. You know, 14.6 points per game. Like, it worked out. It was fine. But these guys, like, if you just waited late and picked up, like, Trey McBride, like, the way that he ended the season, if you ignored, like, the first 5 weeks, he was up there with the rest of these guys in terms of points per week. So, like, And that's always going to be the argument. Jake Ferguson was about there. You know, there was enough players in that sort of low end. David Njoku was quite a low end tight end that put up points, you know, that kept you going. What I will say is that I actually think, despite the increase in tight ends in the league, that the tight end play at the position is worse. So there isn't that much, like, there is now, whereas I didn't think from, I used to say basically outside of the top 6-7 tight ends, it was kind of like, throw your lot in, just stream them. It doesn't really matter. Chase touchdowns. I would say that I probably am slightly cautious on that strategy, because there is starting to see a bit of a plateau here where the top 9 guys were 170. So, you know, there's a bit of a drop between 6 and 7. It's about 20 points, but 7 and 9 is only 4 points. And then there's a huge 27 point drop between Jake Ferguson in 9 and Dalton Schultz in 10. And then you got a couple of guys here, him and Kincaid are 150 points. Taysom Hill, who's not going to put up what he did again. So you're kind of at this stage now where you're looking at about 11 guys. And then there is a real cliff where these guys start dropping about another 20, 30 points. Kyle Pitts, Dallas Goedert, to be fair, he was injured. Mark Andrews, okay, he was injured, so you'd add him in that elite back. So there is probably about 10, 11 guys, and you need to grab one of them. If you want to miss on the early guys and go after some of the later guys, then that kind of makes sense. But you need to have one of those sort of 8 to 10 guys. So you have to be somewhere in that pack. You can't be the very last person to get a tight end. I think you have to be, you could be one of the last, but you can't be the last, because I think there is a significant cliff. Now, I'd be prepared to give up 50, 60 points to the tight end one overall, because I believe that in my draft strategy, I'll make those points up at wide receiver and running back. Yeah. If I'm waiting 8 rounds. 8 rounds for 60-point trade-off, I think, is good price. It's good value. I don't think I'd want to be giving up much more than 60 points, 60, 70 points. So for me, I don't want to get past that teardrop of like tight end 9, tight end 10. That's the kind of floor for me. I think after that, I don't really want to get into it.
I feel like with you having that number of 8 to 10 and the way most leagues are set up with it being standard tight end, one tight end, you only really take 2 if it's a deeper league and you want to stash one on your bench. That's a really good number to have for you to observe the run on tight ends and be able to grab one rather than force the run on tight ends. Just wait for it to start and then grab them when you can. Because essentially, even in a 14-team league, unless the run starts at 1 and you are between 12 and 14 and everybody grabs a tight end, you're not going to miss. I think you're good.
As historically, and I've done this in the book every year, those middle-round tight ends are the worst value in football. They don't work. Like, they've never really hit big. So if we look last year, right? These are the rough overall draft place in PPR scoring. It's a crude average across different platforms. So I don't need anybody to be con at me anymore. I'm not on Twitter. I'll address that at the end. But you can't, don't at me. These are an aggregated number of based on 4 or 5 different platforms. If it's out by a round, it's out by a round. But this is the best data that you're going to get. So Travis Kelce went at 5 overall, bust. Mark Andrews went at 25 overall. So start of the third round. Okay, he got injured. So let's just park that and say he got injured. It's bad luck. It is what it is. All right. TJ Hawkinson, 35 overall, probably returned about value. Fine. George Kittle, 46 overall, didn't work. Darren Waller, 58, didn't work. Dallas Goedert, 64. Okay, he got injured, but didn't work. Kyle Pitts didn't work. He played every game. So really, you're now at this state where we're drafting the 8th tight end off the board, which is Evan Engram in at pick 74. So that is round 7. I'm okay with that. You want to take a tight end in round 7 onwards? I'm good. Like, works.
Yeah.
Evan Engram in round 7 is great. He finishes a tight end 2. He absolutely returned value for you. The next tight end off the board was David Njoku. He went at pick 86. So that's an extra round later, round 8. He finishes a tight end 6, but he actually would have won you leagues with partnering with Joe Flacco. In the playoffs, he had some monster numbers with Joe Flacco down the stretch. Massive value returned for you. So that round 7, round 8 tight end combo worked really well. And then it started to fall off a cliff a bit. Dalton Schultz, pick 129. By the way, Sam Laporte was picked at 113. So Sam Laporte was the steal, was the absolute steal. Like, you took Sam Laporte, you know, you smashed it.
Yeah.
You smashed it out of the park. Unprecedented. Won't happen. Yeah, I won't say won't happen again, but, it all broke right. You know, everyone was on Kincaid. Kincaid actually went first. It didn't work for Kincaid. But you didn't lose too much with having Kincaid. You just didn't get that ceiling. But yeah, I mean, like, the bottom line of this is that, as you say, you monitor it. You track those sort of 8 to 10 guys. And then I think when you're starting to see like the 7th or 8th tight end off the board, that's when you need to start looking. Or you get to round 8, and if you like a guy, then you take one. So for me last year, if Evan Engram was on the board in the 8th round, I nabbed him. I was happy. I paid 8th round, 9th round prices on Evan Engram in most leagues last year, and I was delighted to pay it. Because he finished top 5 the year before. I didn't get the negative value on him. Nothing had changed. They just paid him. So it wasn't like he was going anywhere. They just paid him a load of money. Which says, you're our guy. So I didn't really get where the trend was going the other way on Evan Engram. So I was like, I'm in. I'll pay 8-9 round prices on Evan Engram. He can be my set and forget tight end. And it worked a dream. Because he finished tight end 2. He was a bit streaky at times. But I got great value out of it. He didn't cost me any championships. He won me a few on the way. So that's kind of what you want. You want to find a guy who is in that range, who you really like, who you think is undervalued. Dalton Kincaid might be a great example of that this year, because people will look at Dalton Kincaid's numbers and be really scared. But Buffalo don't have any pass catchers at the moment. Like, he is set up to succeed. Horrifically. Like, the worry is that he bounces too much the other way and the price gets too much to buy into that narrative. But people who I'm absolutely swerving at all costs, I'm swerving Kyle Pitts at all costs. You know, I love Kyle Pitts, forever a Kyle Pitts fan. But at some point, you've just got to give up the ghost and say it's not going to happen. And like, we've had enough now. So, like, the narrative on him with Kirk Cousins is, it's going to go to the moon. I'm not sold. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. I'm out on Kyle Pitts. You can overdraft him at will. I think, again, Dallas Goedert is one I'd be slightly weary on. But yeah, I like Kincaid. I like Freiermuth. I think he's going to be undervalued. The one I think is going to be criminally undervalued this year and forgotten about in all circumstances is Greg Dulcich. I tell you now, I think you'll probably get Greg Dulcich for free. I'm in the Dynasty League, right? We're startup Dynasty League. And I let me find this. So I didn't take a tight end because I don't value tight ends. Okay, so I just took Greg Dulcich, and it's an IDP league. Granted, okay, I just took as my starting tight end in the 21st round. Like the 21st round is when these are the tight ends that went before him. Cade Otton, Chigakonkwo, Luke Musgrave, Darren Waller, who's got one leg.
One leg Waller.
Yeah, Michael Mayer, Cole Kmet, who I don't even think he's the lead tight end anymore in Chicago, is he not?
I don't know.
Pretty sure Gerald Everett is the guy there now, no? I could be wrong. Yeah.
Poor Cole.
Anyway, he's now got target company. I'm not sure. Cole Kmet was drafted in the 13th round. So 9 rounds later, I've got Greg Dulcich. But yeah, I just think wild. Like, I just did not, I just sat there. Tucker Kraft went about the same time as Greg Dulcich. And Isaiah Likely. Isaiah Likely will run around later. I'm like, I'm happy with that. Like, I'll just set and forget Greg Dulcich. See you later. He'd be fine. Like, he'd be like tight end 8.
That is a ginormous statement, Murph. Tight end 8 from a...
Do you understand that, mate, if I played 17 games in the NFL, I'd probably have a shot at being tight end 8 in fantasy football. Tight end 8 in fantasy football, before you say that's a massive shout. Tight end 8 was Cole Kmet at 180 fantasy points. 180 fantasy points 12 is a week. The wide receiver 36. I don't think it's that much of a stretch. Who also, they just traded Jerry Jeudy. So he's got less competition for targets. Greg Dulcich, well, tight end 8, book it.
I mean, if he is the tight end 8, it means he's done something and Denver hasn't completely vaporized this year, so I can get on board with that. Greg.
Yeah. I mean, heck, even if he's tight end 10, like, I'm drafting him after basically guys who aren't even starting, so like, I'm in. I'm good.
That's true. For a starting tight end, that is very, very, very late.
So there's my view on tight ends. Draft him in the 21st round of a startup IDP. Yeah.
Tight ends don't matter. All right, let's talk some kickers and DSTs then before we split. What do you want to tell the people?
So look, if you've never read the Fantasy Football Playbook, get in touch. I'll send you an older copy of the book, the first one, and they talk about DSTs and kickers quite extensively in there. People every year overdraft DSTs. Every year they overdraft DST. How many times were we in a draft last year and the San Francisco 49ers DST was going off in like the 9th round, the 10th round, the 11th round?
There will always be a team that fills their team before their bench.
Right. And by the way, do you know where the San Francisco 49ers DST ranked last year?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I'm going to guess at 6th.
You think they were the DST 6th?
I don't. I'm just guessing. Purely guessing.
You think they were the DST 6th? What if I was to tell you that the San Francisco 49ers were... The DST, I just lost it. The DST 10.
I could have cheated because the information was also in front of me, but I didn't. I played the game and I got it wrong.
So they were the DST 10. Like, horrific. It was so, 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 so bad. So in the book, I talk about you need to invest in DST, but don't ever go and get them quickly. Like if you took the Dallas Cowboys at DST 3, they were the DST 1, that kind of worked for you, and they're a little bit of a point difference, but the points per game numbers just, they don't really scream too much. They don't really do all that much. What I talked about in the book is still true to this day. If you can, here's a strategy for you that you can take into every single draft every single year. Right? If you're going into a draft, draft either the Baltimore Ravens, Pittsburgh Steelers, or New England Patriots DSTs, and just do that every year. Because those three teams are almost consistently inside the top 5, 10 every single year. All right. Granted, this year under Belichick, the New England Patriots were rubbish. They were 23rd overall. Didn't work out too well for you. But the Steelers, they were the DST8. They were 10 points off the DST5. The Baltimore Ravens were the DST2. So just take, in this order, the Ravens, the Steelers, the Patriots. Just grab one of them three, play them every week, job done. It's all you need to do at the DST position. Don't overthink it. Take them in the 15th round and just take one of those three because they're unpopular every single year and you just snag them and they're done. Right? Kickers, a little bit more to it at the kicker position because there is slightly more volatility, but everyone always drafts Justin Tucker as the kicker one. He's always drafted about 100 overall and he never, ever finishes as the kicker one. Just doesn't happen. He's always up there. I mean, you're buying that consistency. He's fine. Like, but you always overpay. He's never the kicker one. He's always the kicker two, the kicker three. He's always the bridesmaid. He's never the bride. And that's fine. Like, you buy that consistency, but you pay a high price for it. The real winners this year, Brandon Aubrey, he was the kicker one. He was undrafted. Kairos Santos was undrafted. He was the kicker three. Jason Myers was undrafted. He was also tied as the kicker three. So, like, the bottom line is everyone that picked, everyone that thought they knew what they were doing, i.e. 49ers DST, went as the first overall, finished as the DST 10. Here's the best one. The Eagles were the next DST off the board. So they were drafted 103 overall, the Philadelphia Eagles, right? The DST 2, where do you think they finished if you haven't looked at the sheet?
Well, they gave up lots of points last year, the Eagles. And I'm going to say bottom half.
DST 27.
Good Lord.
Bottom That's six. Not good. So if you invested a 103rd pick in a draft for the Eagles, you dropped them. They were dead. They were finished. They were useless. So, like, that's my point. You take – here's my strategy for kickers and DSTs. If you're in a 16-round draft, take your kicker in the 14th round, take your DST in the 15th round, and then take your flyer, your late-round sleeper in the 16th round, right? So go one round over everybody, and then DST, pick the Ravens, then the Steelers, and then the Patriots. All you need to do. Pretty straightforward. Kickers, just pick someone on a high-scoring team. So typically you can go with Tucker will be long gone, but Butker tends to stick around. Dallas always tend to score a lot of points. Chase McLaughlin in Tampa, they'll score a lot of points. You know, you can just go with, there's a load of guys you can go with. Ultimately, it doesn't really matter all that much. If you can bag yourself, Butker, Bass, McPherson, Myers of Seattle always does really well. Jason Sanders from Miami, he's another one, or Jake Elliott of Philadelphia. Those are all the sorts of, you just nab any one of those guys. One of them will be lurking around there. You'll be fine.
Grab the Houston kicker.
Yeah. I don't know who that's going to be this year, but yeah, if they get a half decent one, go with him. Like at the end of the day, go with someone like that. It's a pretty foolproof, especially if you're going to go and grab them around early and everyone else, one of those guys will be on the board. I advocate getting, so again, last three rounds, go kicker, DST, and then late round flyer. That's how I would do it. You'll be around ahead of everybody else. You'll have a fair spread of most of the top guys. Pick who you think is best. DSTs, like, the bottom line is everyone thinks, oh, the DSTs, and they look at the schedule, and they either spend too much time thinking about it, or they go with the ADP. The ADP is always wrong. Always is wrong. Classically, we've just gone through and told you that DST1 was DST10, the DST2 was DST27. Like, the ADP is always wrong. just stick with the Ravens, the Steelers, and the Patriots, and you'll be fine. And if it's not, you can pivot. It's fine. You get away with it. Don't follow the ADP. Kickers, you know who to take. It's the same guys every year. They very rarely let you down unless they get injured. And then take your late-round flyer, whoever that might be. By going slightly one round up, that gives you a wider pool to pick from. You won't get stuck in the chase. Take the kicker first, then the DST. And that's how you swerve it. That strategy works pretty well for me most years. You get a set and forget kicker, a set and forget DST, and then you can worry about the bye weeks as and when. Try and avoid taking both of them on the same bye week as the other critical piece, because you don't want to be you don't want your kicker and your DST on the same bye, because then that's two bench pieces you have to sacrifice to cover both of those. So if you can spread your bye weeks, then effectively you can stream. You have one floating piece on your bench, and then just take that out, get a backup kicker, float that out, get a backup DST, or whatever order you need to do it in. And that's really it. But like the bottom line of the review from last year is, again, we kind of talked about this. There's going to be one or two late round guys there is every year at the tight end position if you can identify them, and we're going to do our best to identify them for you, and that's why you listen. We'll tell you our late round flyers and late round or later round tight ends. The DST strategy is pretty straightforward, as is the kicker strategy. We probably won't mention it again because we don't need to. It's the same every year. The scoring is static. Nothing ever changes. The points per game, and you know this gets referenced in the playbook, it's such a minimal variance between the kicker 1 and the kicker 12. It's like around 2 points a game. And that variance hasn't changed in like 10 years. It's always less than 3 and always greater than 2. So it's just not a great amount of variance at the kicker position. This year, I think, was probably the greatest year of variance ever. And that's only because Brandon Aubrey absolutely smashed it. So he was at 181, which is one of the highest scoring kicker years. If we took him out as the exception and looked at kicker 2 to kicker 12, kicker 2 to kicker 12 was 14 points, which is less than 1 point per game. That's why it's in the relevant position. It doesn't matter. You don't need to put any thought into it, because whether you kick off the kicker 2 or the kicker 12, it's one point a week. Not even that you sacrifice. If you picked up Brandon Aubrey, you smashed it. Everyone else, it didn't really matter. And like that, and that's it. That's the kicker position all over. The DST position, there is slightly more variance in the sense of, but the Ravens, the Steelers, and the Patriots are always undervalued every single year. So you just grab one of those teams, and you'll always be okay. You'll always kind of be hovering around DST 5. Maybe slightly higher. I've had a couple of years where the Patriots have absolutely smashed it. But, you know, those teams tend to hover around DST5, and that's kind of what you're looking for the position. Take all the variance and guesswork out of it. Just take, I think the Ravens have been top 5, like 9 of the last 11 seasons. And the Steelers have not been that far behind that either. Those two teams are remarkably consistent. The Patriots are right up there. They had a terrible year this year, but that's just an off year happens, right?
Yeah. So what I've got from today is this is an exclusive podcast, limited edition. If you want to know anything else about tight ends, kickers, or DSTs, well, not tight ends so much, but kickers and DSTs, bookmark this point in history, because we won't be touching it again until somewhere mid through the season.
No, I guess. Well, I guess we might do. Like, if people ask questions, we'll answer them. But we just spent 20 minutes at the top talking about why there's variance. It's because there's no variance in that scoring. It doesn't change, and therefore there's very little changes.
And that's why there is variance being created by
100%.
Yeah.
Cool. So it is what it is. Like, you know. The reason why people want to drop kickers is there is not really a big skill element to it, and DST is the same.
Yeah, fair. Well, we managed to get to an hour, Murph. The first half an hour was quick, and I thought we were going to struggle, but we filled the sandwich nicely with some kickers and DSTs. Anything else before we skedaddle?
I think I just referenced last week, right? I think it's important because I'm not on Twitter anymore for a while. I will be back. I'll be back at some point. I think it's important to talk about. I'll start by saying that I'm relatively okay. I use relative in a non fixed term. I think it's important to say that I condemn massively the abuse. If that was something that was written about anybody who podcasted for us or written for us or anything, I'd have put out a very vehement statement. And the reason you haven't seen one is because I didn't write one for myself and don't feel like I need to. I decided to deactivate my Twitter for a few weeks at the minimum. I haven't decided. I will be back at some point. It's not a reflection on the kind people of this community. It's not a reflection on the wonderful messages of support I've received, and I massively appreciate them. If you're listening to this and not quite clued up what is going on, I posted a article by somebody who was on the Traitors UK who has ginger hair, who highlighted that he'd basically been bullied most of his life for having ginger hair, and had started working for a charity, the National Bullying Helpline, to help people. And he highlighted some stories that he'd heard from kids who had ginger hair. And it resonated with me. I've been bullied my entire life for the color of my hair. And the abuse that I got for posting that with some context to things that had happened to me in my life were pretty disgusting. I think three people wanted me to end my life. It was countless other messages of hatred and horrible things that were said. Some people will chime in and say that I should grow thicker skin. I will say that I'm mostly okay with what was said. It wasn't a surprise. I started that my post with saying I expect backlash on it because I predicted it, because I knew it would happen. The bottom line is I expect that kind of hatred. The other thing I would say to anybody wishing I had thicker skin, first of all, I've got pretty thick skin. I've been bullied my whole life. I know what it's like. I expect it, and sadly, I shouldn't have to, but I do. I acknowledge it, and I swallow it, and I'm okay for the most part. The thing is, it's not just about me. It's about my family. It's about my friends who have to read that. There were people who are married to me, related to me, who were incredibly upset at the abuse that was hurled. And whilst it's easy for me just to condemn people for what they put or whatever, the bottom line is it's not about me. I'm not a vanity person. I'm not someone who needs, to be told I'm great. The same way I don't need people giving me a load of stick for no reason. But also at the same point, it's not about me. It's the people who love me, the people who are part of my team, part of my family, had to read that and were incredibly upset. And it's something that, whilst I didn't choose to put them through it, have incidentally put them through it. And that's ultimately the bigger reason for why I need to take a break. It's to spare them of any more need or wanting to read such horrible things about me, about someone they care about. And again, I urge people who say, hey, just grow thicker skin. This is, if you're on social media, that's what it is. It's, well, how would you feel if it was your spouse being abused? How would you feel if it was your child, your nephew, your niece, or your family member, your mum and dad being abused? And how would you feel and take that? Because it's not about me. It's about other people and how they view that. I will always be okay. I have enough mental resilience to be okay. But it's about other people. I'm not going to put other people through that. It's not their fight and it's not their need to witness and see such horrible things. So taking a break, I also think it's important to state that platforms who don't regulate should be punished. The kind of abuse that was hurled at me, you know, there's one thing having a joke, there's one thing spewing a bit of hate, wishing people dead and telling people to go and kill themselves is just a completely different kettle of fish. And that's not okay. And that's not okay that those comments weren't regulated. I reported them. They weren't taken down. So ultimately, I cancelled my Twitter subscription. It's the only thing in my power that I can do to punish the social media company is they don't get my money. It's not a big thing. It's not going to cause them to make any changes. I'm not stupid enough to think that it would cause any change. Right? I understand that. But at the same point, I feel like I've got to do something. That's the one thing that's in my power and in my wheelhouse that I can do. And that's something that I have done. So I will preface this and say that I'm okay. For the most part, I won't lie and say that it's been a tough year, 18 months. And there were some things from last year, which I'm still working my way through, not from a physical perspective, but more from a mental perspective, which I will continue to work on. But I'm smiling. We've sat here and had lots of laughs in the last hour. So I think that should be a testament to show you that I'm not in a horrible, dark, miserable place. And I'm not hiding away. We're still doing podcasts. We're still going to pod. We're still going to catch up every week. And I'm still reachable. To those who want to get in touch, if you have a Sleeper handle for me, you can get in touch with me there. If you have my email address, you can get in touch there. If you want to get in touch over the 5-yard handle, I'm sure someone who picks that up can forward me an email address or whatever it might be. I'm not hiding away. I'm happy to interact with anybody. It just will not be on Twitter for the foreseeable future. I will be back, I promise you, at some point when it's appropriate, deemed right, or whatever. I don't know. But at some point, I'll be back. But I think it was important to say. I appreciate all the support. I want to say a big shout out to Tom Strachan, actually. So, I've known Tom a while. And, as you through this community and whatever, you backwards and forwards with fellow fantasy pros writers, but he's not someone I speak to like every day, every week. We touch base, we've conversed. We've spent time together. We've met at UKFFC a few times, etc. But, he's not someone I speak to like overly regularly. And I kind of feel bad for that. But he wrote a really nice message at the weekend. And I just, for my family's sake and my perspective, I want to say thank you. And I really appreciate that. It meant the world to my family. They got to see a lot of people respond to him with some of the positive things that I represent and stand for. And it gave me an opportunity to show my family that, hey, not everyone on that platform is bad. There's a reason I love it, and there's a reason I interact with people on it. And the good far outweighs the bad in a lot of ways. And Tom gave me a great opportunity to take that platform for its goodness and showcase it to people who were concerned that I just get hurled abuse all the time. It's 100% not the case. I've had abuse from time to time on the platform, but my interactions are mostly until last weekend very positive. And so I wanted to take this opportunity just to thank Tom. If Tom isn't watching, if someone could just let him know that I have said thanks, I would really greatly appreciate that. It would mean the world to me if someone could just let him know that I said thank you, because it really meant a lot to me, and thank you to the person who forwarded me his message, and thank you to everyone underneath who commented as well. It really meant a great deal to me, and I really appreciate it. I'm going to give one last shout out. Apologies, because I'm kind of going long here. A good friend of mine called Anthony Wooden, and he'll be on the show at some point, has written a book. Here it is, right? The Greatest American Football Story That Has Never Been Told. And it's How Gridiron Stopped the War. Now, I've not read this. I only received this today. I think it's been out a few weeks. He sent this to me and he signed it. So I really appreciate that. It's out on Amazon via Pitch Publishing. We'll get him on to talk about it, but it's just effectively talking about American football, World War II. I've sort of had the Cliff Notes version of it. There's some photos in here. Incredibly fascinating. If you don't know Anthony, I had the pleasure of meeting him in Munich a couple of years ago. He does a lot of stuff with the NFL UK. He covers a lot of the games. He goes to all the games, covers it in the media. He has a great podcast, the Transatlantic podcast. Well, football podcast. I should get that right. He's done a lot of promotion for this book. He's been on TalkSport. He's been on a lot of places. But just genuinely one of the nicest people I've ever met. Really, really kind, genuine person. I really hope that people go out and buy this. We'll put links into the show notes for this. I think any person who writes a book about American football, it's great. We have Ben Isaacs talk about his book. This is someone who isn't probably as well known as Ben Isaacs, but absolutely should be. Very, very talented writer, talented media creator, but just all around great bloke. So if people are looking for a new book to read or just want to support an amazing person in the community, please do go out and buy this. We'll put links in there and I hope you enjoy it. And we'll get him on the show. I'll set up some time with him soon and we'll get him on and we'll talk about it in more detail and we'll probably give away a copy or two of the book as well. So, just wanted to do that because he's top bloke and I'm looking forward to reading that over the weekend.
Sounds like a real interesting read there.
Yeah.
So it's slightly unusual compared to the norm of pigskin reading. So,
absolutely. And if you like your history and the formation of the games and you know, especially as there's good reference to London in here. So, really looking forward to reading this. It's all about the T-ball. So, features heavily about Canadians as well. So, a lot of love.
Something for everybody. Something for everybody. Right, Rush Nation, that is going to do it for today, Murph. This has been fun. Basically, tight ends matter somewhere in the middle and kickers and DSTs are at the end. And you won't hear another word about them until, well, who knows when. But Rush Nation, until next week, that's going to do it. As always, don't forget, keep rushing.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.